Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Keaton Thompson is back. And what does that mean for Virginia football? Chris Graham here on the podcast today. We're going to talk about UVA sports a little bit. Keaton Thompson and UVA football starting. The Virginia football roster for 2022 was released on Monday. Quietly, you know, no press release sent out or anything like that. And no numbers, of course, because that's one thing that Bronco Mendenhall didn't leave us was numbers for guys. But when you looked at the list of players on the roster, one of the names that jumped out was Keaton Thompson. He's still listed as football player, a throwback to the Mendenhall regime. But Thompson played wide receiver. He ran the ball some out of the backfield, but he's a wide receiver. And the 6'4 Thompson, who came to Virginia a couple of years ago as a grad transfer, he'll take advantage of a third year. Gosh, this will be his sixth season as a college player. But his third year as a UVA player, he originally came with 2 years of eligibility because of the COVID year. So he was a grad transfer from Mississippi State. I mean, that's, hey, kids out there, if he graduated from Mississippi State in 3 years, and that's why he was able to transfer to Virginia with 2 years of eligibility, because one of the years he played there, he didn't play enough and was able to use as a redshirt year. That's why he's going to be a good way towards a doctorate if he wants to be by the time he finishes at Virginia. And man, the only thing I thought was this kid is an NFL player. If he's not going to transfer, he's going to go to the NFL. Last year, the 6'4", 210 Thompson led Virginia with 78 catches. Team high 112 targets, 990 yards, ranked second on the team to Dontavian Wicks, 1201. 453 yards after the catch were tops among the receiver corps. 52 first downs through the air, also tops of 52 of his 78 catches. Literally two-thirds of his catches were for first downs. His pro football focus grade was 85.5. That was also tops among the receiver corps. And then he ran for 247 yards, averaged 6.3 yards an attempt. And we're not talking reverses. He'd line up in the backfield. Some as a Wildcat quarterback as well, scored four rushing touchdowns. And so what this means for Virginia football is you've got your top three pass catchers from 2021. You've got Thompson. You've got Dontavian Wicks, 57 catches, 93 targets, 1,201 yards, 78.8 pro football focus grade. And Billy Kemp, the fourth, 74 catches on 99 targets, 710 yards, possession receiver, slot receiver, PFF grade of 73.8, as well as getting back Lavelle Davis Jr. He was the one coming into the season last year that you hoped would be able to get to play. He tore his ACL in spring camp, and very wise move, by the UVA medical staff to just keep him off the field. Keep him in the red shirt territory, but he averaged 25.8 yards a catch in 2020. His pro football focus grade that year, 65.2. And so you've got those guys all back. It would not surprise me. And of course you got Brennan Armstrong back for 4,449 yards, 65.2 completion percentage, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 91.8 pro football focus grade. You've got your passing game back. Got your passing game back. Now you've got a new approach. Robert Anai is gone. He's at Syracuse now, and I'm seeing rumors that he may be interested in the Hawaii job. Hawaii native is Robert Anai. Took his name out of the running for that job a couple of years ago. But boy, it'd be surprising if he didn't get an interview there. Anyway, he's gone as far as the Virginia offense is concerned. His pass run split was 72.0% pass, 28.0% run. When I say that, you might look at the numbers and say, hey, Chris, I looked and they threw the ball 550 sometimes, ran the ball 330 sometimes. There's no way that 72-28. There were close to 40 sacks, I think it was, 37 scrambles by quarterbacks. They count as runs in college football for some reason. The scrambles certainly do. But when you look at it from the perspective, those were drop back passes. Those were called as passes. The play calling was 72%, 28% pass run. When you look at Tony Elliott, now he's the head coach now. He's hired Desmond Kitchings from the Atlanta Falcons, also from the NC State and from Vanderbilt. Desmond Kitchings will be the offensive coordinator. But you know that Tony Elliott is going to bring his philosophy that he used at Clemson as the offensive coordinator to Virginia. they actually had a pass run split of 50.5% to 49.5%, not 72-28, just about 50-50, as close to 50-50 as possible. In fact, when you factor in that, you know, there were sacks and scrambles, they threw the ball, excuse me, I'll get there eventually, 46% of the time. So what does all this mean? Well, one, you got to find an offensive line. You literally have lost your entire starting offensive line from last year three players transferred out. One's going to the NFL and one, Chris Glazer, just losing his eligibility. He played 5 years, including the COVID redshirt year. So you'll have to find some new linemen, but you'll use your running backs more. And you're not going to see guys like Thompson and Wicks and Kemp and Davis used, you know, for as many targets necessarily. Virginia threw the ball 45 times a game, 45.6 times per game to be precise, at least with Brandon Armstrong, averaged 45.6 pass attempts per game. You're not going to see that next year out of Virginia, but you're going to see all the guys that made all the catches last year are going to be back. And I think they're going to be more effective. I don't think this is even a question. They're going to be more effective. I mean, assuming you get an offensive line that can block, which they're going to find an offensive line and get him ready to block for Armstrong, the passing game, and also the running game. The running game is going to make Virginia two-dimensional. They were one-dimensional last year. You could see that really in the red zone. Virginia was, I think, ranked third in the country in total offense and still was nowhere near the top in scoring because, you know, throwing the ball over the field works until you get inside the 20s and particularly inside the 15 and 10. As the field shortens and defensive secondaries, especially and linebackers can help each other out in coverage more. You can play zone and man at the same time. You can do all kinds of stuff that you can't do when you have to cover a much bigger part of the field and have to, you know, spread your resources out. The Virginia game would bog down. And so, with the new approach that, you know, is coming and you know that they're going to, the offensive line, when they get them in place, they'll be asked to impose their will a bit in the run game. There are running backs who can, you know, do some damage. Mike Collins, Ronnie Walker Jr., Ahmad Faustin, new guys coming in, I'm sure can help out in there as well. There's going to be a depth chart of guys who can run the ball, and they'll be used this year, which will be fun. And then maybe Keaton Thompson gets some you know, play at, you know, some wildcat snaps, that kind of thing. You can work some razzle dazzle in there. But I think the offense will be just fine as far as that goes. So, hey, let's shift gears. This is going to be a UVA-themed podcast. We'll talk now some NBA. Who's in the NBA? And Kyle Guy. I'm not breaking any news here. It's Tuesday, and this news was from a couple of days ago. But Kyle Guy is signing a two-way deal. He signed a two-way deal with the Miami Heat. And this closes a circle a bit for Guy. He had signed a couple of 10-day hardship contracts with the Heat like a lot of NBA teams here in the Omicron days of our COVID outbreak, had some injury issues and some COVID issues, and teams were allowed to sign guys these 10-day contracts. He actually had a great run, his first 10-day contract anyway. He averaged, one of the 10-day contract averaged just under 10 points a game. 51.4% shooting from the field, 45% from three. He's not getting as much time now that the guys are back, but the Heat liked what they saw so much out of Kyle in that run, that first 10-day run. They signed him to a second 10-day, and then they've decided to just go ahead and sign him for the season. And it's good news for Kyle in one respect, and I'll talk about how it's not good news in a second too, but from a just a personal perspective, two-way deals earn players a flat salary of $462,629 this year in the NBA, half the rookie minimum. When Kyle was on a two-way contract with the Sacramento Kings a couple years ago, the situation in place then was when you were in the NBA, you got a per diem basically of NBA money. You have the standard NBA minimum contract, that, you know, percentage thereof. And then when you were in the G League, you got G League money. You were only able to be on the roster for 45 days, the NBA roster, that is, for 45 days as a two-way player a couple of years ago. Now you can be with your NBA team for up to 50 games of the 82-game schedule. And given that Miami's already played 44 of their 82 games, They could keep Kyle Guy up if they wanted to the rest of the season. And it wouldn't be surprising to see that they might do that, if just for practice purposes. But, you know, that's great news for Kyle. If Guy was, you know, making, you know, G League money for a year and a half, is now he's not making the NBA rookie minimum, but he's at least making some more money. So good for him in that personal respect. From the perspective of his development as a player, the Heat roster, I mean, I love the Heat style of play. I've watched a lot of Heat basketball lately on the G League or the NBA League Pass. I watch a lot of G League too, the NBA League Pass. And I love their style of play, and Kyle fits into it well. The problem is that the Heat are loaded at guard. Kyle Lowry, former longtime Toronto Raptor, Duncan Robinson, a great three-point shooter, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Tyler Hero, who was a hero a couple of years ago for Miami when they made that surprise run to the NBA Finals. He's a bench guy for this team now. Those five guys ahead of Kyle in the rotation, so he's not likely to break through to get minutes unless there's another rash of injuries, another, you know, COVID situation or something like that, and he'd have to avoid that himself. So in terms of opportunity, there's not much there, but he's making money. So we'll call that good news in the end for Kyle, and we'd be happy for Kyle in that respect. So one more bit of news, UVA sports related. Let's go back. We'll go back to our preview. Virginia tomorrow night, Virginia basketball, that is, men's basketball, will face tomorrow night Pitt in a rematch of a game Virginia won in JPJ in the first matchup between the two back in December. 57-56, you might remember Virginia had to score 5 points in the final 11 seconds to win that game. So Jaden Gardner had the five. He got a 3-point play, an end one, and then Pitt turned the ball over on the inbounds, a 5-second count, which is a 5-second violation, which is just so rare. And then Virginia turned that into a hoop from Gardner that hit every part of the rim, off a little bit of the backboard, bounced in. Very soft, friendly rims in JPJ, and Gardner got the game-winning bucket in the Hoos won that game. These two teams will play Wednesday night, as I mentioned, 9 o'clock at Pitt. And, you know, on paper, this is a Pitt team that, gosh, they're 7-10 overall, 2-4 in the ACC. When you look at their roster, you look at all the metrics, they shouldn't beat anybody. But this Pitt team just beat Louisville by 12 points at home this past weekend. In the game in JPJ, they were 8-for-16 from three. They shoot 30% for the year from three, 348th out of 358 in D1. But, you know, they somehow do it. In that win over Louisville, Jamarius Burton had 20 points. John Hughley had 19. Those were also the two leading scorers for Pitt in the game against Virginia that they should have won, to be honest. Hughley, a 6'9 center, is a leading scorer, 15.4 points, 8.1 rebounds a game. She's 46% from the field, just 17% from three. Advice, Mr. Hughley, don't shoot threes anymore. His buckets do largely come in the paint. He's shooting 50% on 130 post-ups this season. 130 post-ups in 17 games, that's quite a number. That's eight post-ups per game. And he gets to the line a lot, 7.8 free throw attempts per game. He hits 72.2% from the free throw line. So it's going to be incumbent. He plays the five. It's going to be incumbent on Virginia's bigs, Caden Shedrick and Francisco Cafaro, to stay out of foul trouble. They did not do that in the opening matchup. Cafaro fouled out in 17 minutes, and Shedrick had four fouls in 21 minutes as Tony Bennett just had to shuffle those guys in and out with all the foul trouble. That said, Hughley didn't really do a lot of damage in that game against Virginia. But he had 11. I said they were the two leading scorers. He had 11. Burton had 12, and Burton is a 6'4 senior shooting guard. He scores 13 points a game, shoots 38.9% from the field, 32.6% from three. Not a great defender. He's actually a below average defender according to Synergy Sports data. The point guard, Femi Odukale, I'm sure I'm butchering the heck out of that name, 11.9 points per game, 37.5% from the field, 31.9% from three. He's a 6'5 point guard, so he can give you some trouble just with his size. I'm sure the matchup there is Reese Beekman defensively. Boy, another name I'm going to probably terribly mispronounce. Mamadou Guy. Let's just say Guy. It's G-U-E-Y-E. Man, I should have a pronunciation guide. It's in front of me, and I don't have it. 6'10 power forward. Averages 8.6 points, 6 rebounds a game. Also a below average defender, though. He played reasonably well against Jaden Gardner. Gardner did have those 5 points in the last 11 seconds, but for the game, he had 15 points. So Guy had done a great job up to that stage on Gardner. The other starter is a 6'7 small forward, William Jeffress, 4.8 points, 4.3 rebounds a game. 30% from the field, 20% from three. I mean, all these numbers are not great numbers. I don't know how these guys, but you know, give them credit. It's a roster that Jeff Capel had to just put together out of the thin air after losing a bunch of his guys from last year. Fleshing out the rotation, 6'7 forward, Nate Santos, Noah Collier. This is a team that is slapdash together as you can imagine. But again, they should have beaten Virginia the first time out. They got a nice win over Louisville over the weekend. Virginia's going to need a bounce back performance from Gardner. His numbers are down 14.7 rebounds a game, 52.5% from the field. He averaged just 6.5 points per game last week on 20.8% shooting, 5 of 24 combined from the floor in the win. He was 2 for 10 in the win over Virginia Tech and then 3 for 14 in a loss to Wake Forest. Gardner has just shrunk in the last couple of games. In the win over Pitt, he was 7 of 10 from the field, 15 points. Armon Franklin has been playing well of late. He's averaging 12.5 points on the season per game and then 43% from the field, 24.4% from three. But over his last 7 games, he's averaging 14.3 points. He's shooting 48%, so up from 43% on the season from the field, and 30.6% from three, up from his 24.4% for the season. He was right around the 20% mark at the beginning of his stretch from three. So those numbers are going up, and Franklin is attacking. He's getting some mid-range shots. He's getting to the rim a little bit. He had 10 points on 5 of 14 shooting, 5 of 8 from 2 and 0 of 6 from 3. Hey, we should have figured it out sooner in the win over Pitt back in December. Reese Beekman's also been playing well of late. On the season, 7.5 points, 4.6 assists. But in the last 6 games, he's averaging 10 points, 4.5 assists, shooting 53%. His season's mark is 41%. And then from 3, he's shooting 41.7% in the last 6 games. Season 25.8. So Beekman, and then defensively, he's Reese Beekman. He plays great defense, leading the ACC in steals. Had a great performance against Alondis Williams, holding him in check for a large stretch of that game. So, the key is going to be getting Gardner off the schneid and keeping Franklin and Beekman moving forward, and then just keeping those bigs, Shedrick and Cafaro, out of foul trouble. Those guys were in trouble, and that that's a big reason why Virginia was not able to get a lot of momentum going in that game, and very well could have lost and should have lost that game to Pitt the first time out. So those two teams will play again. That's tomorrow night, Wednesday night. We're recording this on Tuesday. It's Wednesday night, 9 o'clock. So another late night for us in ACC land, and it's on ACC Network. And part of what that means is I've got to miss AEW Dynamite tomorrow night. I can watch the first hour. I'm not covering the game in Pitt, so I can watch maybe the first hour and then catch the second hour later or something like that. But they mess with my wrestling schedule. That makes life difficult for me. I'll throw another, since I've mentioned wrestling as we're wrapping up the podcast here, I'll throw one bit of wrestling news that relates to Charlottesville, John Paul Jones Arena. WWE will be returning to JPJ on March 27th, the Road to WrestleMania Tour, stopping in JPJ on Sunday, March 27th, literally a week before WrestleMania 38. That's the next Sunday. And so 1 week ahead of WrestleMania, the SmackDown roster will be heading to JPJ for a house show event. We're more than 2 months out from the event, so there's no card announced at this stage. We've been told that it's a SmackDown roster, that the Universal Champion Roman Reigns, the current SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair, the Tag Team Champions the Usos, the Intercontinental Champion Shinsuke Nakamura, the former Tag Champs the New Day will be on the card. It's a house show. It's not a TV show. I've been to JPJ for a couple of WWE Monday Night Raw tapings. When I say tapings, they're live, so we call them tapings for some reason. But this will just be a house show. I say just a house show. It's a week before WrestleMania. All the stars will be there. Sometimes house shows can be better because you don't get the rigmarole that you get when you're there for a live event. The live events are their shows are 3 hours long. They go on forever, but You know, you got a lot of backstage stuff that you have to watch on the screen and that kind of thing. When you're there for a live event, a house show event, you can see some special things. I know that there was a house show event a few years back where because of a couple of travel issues, the main event that night got blown up. And so they had to have Shinsuke Nakamura against AJ Styles. If there's worse things, certainly, than having to see a makeshift match between Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles. For your ticket price there. It's looking like the main event for WrestleMania 38 is going to feature Roman Reigns against the current WWE champ Brock Lesnar. WWE is kind of selling that right now as a title versus title match. But from what we're hearing, Dave Meltzer reporting yesterday, I believe it was, that that's not likely to be the case. Don't bank on that. But in the event, JPJ show is a 7 p.m. bell time, 7 p.m. on a Sunday night. Tickets start at $15 and go on sale Friday at Ticketmaster.com. So I'm thinking about getting a couple friends together. I don't watch a lot of WWE these days. I love AEW. Just went to a show all the way down in Norfolk this past, six or eight weeks ago. But when WWE's in Charlottesville, I'm going to probably have to make my way over the mountain to see that. And so again, tickets are $15, go on sale on Friday at Ticketmaster.com. And more information about that on the Augusta Free Press website. So, boy, some UVA sports, some WWE here towards the end, a little bit of talk about AEW. Not a bad sports podcast for a Tuesday. Thank you so much for your time. If you have any questions, any comments, anything you want me to address in a future podcast, drop me a line at AugustaFreePress2@gmail.com. That email address all over the Augusta Free Press website. Thank you so much for your time. Everyone have a great day.